Looking to start a business? Owner gives you the tools you need to get started today. Trusted by companies like RBC, Futurepreneur, and the City of Toronto, Owner enables Canadian entrepreneurs to start, manage, and grow their business. Right now, Owner is offering their sole proprietor registration for just $49. I used Owner to register my business back in 2020, and it was so easy to do. When I make the move to incorporate, I am definitely going through Owner. Find out how easy it is to start your business today at callenbrecken.com/owner. That's O-W-N-R. Or click the link in the show notes. Now, let's get on to today's episode. Welcome to the Business Day Podcast, where we talk about all things business, marketing, and entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Callen Brecken, and on today's episode, I have special guest, Greg Brown. With a career spanning over 30 years, Greg is an internationally recognized speaker, advisor, entrepreneur, and business mentor. Greg was part of the team that opened the first wave of Starbucks in Canada. His insights on change and the future of work have been featured in Forbes, Newsweek, Rolling Stone, and Entrepreneur, as well as on CTV's The Social and Global News. Greg has been mentoring entrepreneurs with the Canadian LGBTQ Chamber of Commerce, also known as the CGLCC, for many years. He believes small businesses and entrepreneurs build community and create opportunities for people to express their creativity in the world. He is the author of the number one Amazon bestseller, Spark Action: How to Lead Change That Matters, which has just been named as one of the top business books to read in 2024 by Thinkers360. Greg holds a Master's of Social Science degree from the University of Leicester in the UK with a focus on organizational psychology, leadership, and performance, and is an associated member of the American Psychological Association. I'm excited to chat with Greg about organizational leadership and the future of work, so let's jump in. Welcome to the podcast, Greg. I'm so excited to have you. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm so excited to be here, Callen.
Yes. So I do want to start off a little quick story. I know that you were a mentor for Vin and Luca, who were also on this podcast.
Yes.
Yes. So it was very serendipitous, and I love them. And so I was like, oh, well, then I'm going to obviously love Greg. So thank you for joining. I want to jump right into it. You have a whole history of business. So in all of your years of running a business and coaching and mentoring and all the other things for business owners, what are the biggest pitfalls you tend to see with someone when they are starting a business?
There are a few. And the reason I say there are a few, because they're my pitfalls as well when I started the business, my own business many years ago. So I'd worked in government and private sector, but I always had a little business on the side. So these are some of the things that I did that I've seen other people do. One of the first things that I think people should not do is wait until they have a logo and the perfect website and the perfect branding. Because in my first business, I was working with a woman. We were doing diversity consulting many years ago, like 30 years ago. We spent a year getting a logo. We had a brochure because this was before internet. At the end of the year, we're sitting in my living room, and I'm like, we don't have any business. We don't have any people. So we scrapped that whole idea. So I think that's a danger, is that we want everything to be perfect. And the big thing is get out the door, get revenue in, get a logo later. You can get cheap logos off the internet anywhere that have your initials. Do something, but don't spend $25,000 going, I'm going to brand this, my brand. No, get it out. Get some traction. See if people are going to actually buy what you're going to sell. And that's my number one out of that.
So do you think that it goes along the lines of, you know how they always tell entrepreneurs to fail fast, especially in tech? It's like that's what it is. It's like, don't do all the zhuzh and all the fancy, you know, busy work. Get an actual product out there.
Yeah. So that's the other thing. I'm glad you brought that up. Get your product out, or service, you know, like I do service delivery just like you do, and different service delivery. Get feedback on your product or service, and not from friends or family, because they're all going to be too nice to you.
Yeah, you need people who will slap you around a bit.
Yeah, get people who are like, this isn't going to work. This is going to work. This, you know, get some honest feedback around how to tweak, what you need to do. whether that's find mentors or peers, get somebody who's not close to you to give you that feedback. And I still do that in my work.
Yeah. So if you're going to give advice to somebody, be like, fail fast, fail hard, throw it out there, make it messy. That's something I've learned in my years. And I just talked about this in a previous podcast, is that if you're feeling good about it when you put it out there, you took too long to do it. If you feel
That's a good
good.
point. That's a good point. Because I think the thing is this, you want to have some things do need to be done well and done right. However, if you're newly starting a business, you got to pay your bills. Even if you're doing it off the side of your desk and you have a full-time job, you've got to get the traction and you have to figure out what the numbers are before you do that. Like, how much do I have to sell? How many widgets? How much service do I need to do? Because some things are not scalable.
Because
Years
human
ago,
beings,
say that again.
because I was going to say human beings are just one of us if you're the only one.
Exactly. I remember back in 2010, I was laid up sick for a couple of months. And what was quite funny was I said, oh, I'm going to start another business because that's, again, another challenge about being an entrepreneur is squirrel. We want to start this, we start that. So I did this whole little program that I was going to do some. I love real estate, so I was going to do, this real estate learning exchange, it was called. And I worked with someone on a logo because I was bedridden. I did this and I did that. And then finally, after 2 months, I'm like, I better do the numbers on this. There was no way I was going to be able to make any money charging what I needed to charge, which the market would bear. So I scrapped.
Yeah, you need to have profit. Like, there needs to be a profit that could come through that's above your expenses.
For sure. Like, or it's a hobby. And I'm okay if you want to make baskets as a hobby or, consult on the side just to make some extra cash. Awesome. But you're right. You need to make some money. You have to pay your expenses and you need to pay your rent.
Yeah, I think that the world did us a disservice when it started to try and say, follow your passion, do your passion. I do not believe in that. I might once upon a time have believed in that, but now I believe in, nope, your passion for can be those hobbies, can be those things you
It
can
can.
enjoy, but don't make it your business because it will very quickly not be your passion anymore.
Or it can be. What I do, I love what I do. It is, I have been teaching people since I was 10 years old and sat down my friends in front of a chalkboard to try to teach them math. And then I taught, in when I was a teenager, crafts and canoeing is, and I love speed, and it is my passion to do the work I do. And what you're saying is right as well. So, I'm lucky if you can make money off your passion, great. And I tell people, look at what you like to do as a kid. And if you can do that as an adult and make money, that will make you happy. So when I was a kid, I used to like to build houses. So I used to like to buy and sell real estate for fun. And I used to love to teach people things. And now I get to do that and make money. I could have gone the way of a school teacher, but I decided that wasn't what I wanted to do. You're right. And you're right. Sometimes it's about just doing work that you like to do and flipping your business and making money. That's not who I am. And my hat goes off to you that you can do that. So
Yeah.
there's a world of both.
Yeah, and it's not like you don't love what, I'm not saying you don't love what you
No,
do,
I
but
know.
like it's like I love to learn about finances, I love to learn about tech. I enjoy it a lot. I am
Wow.
passionate to a degree, but I wouldn't say that that is like a like love passion of mine. I'm
Oh,
talking
God.
about like the singing and the
Oh,
acting
all
or the
that
like
artsy fun
crafting
stuff
and
on this.
artsy and
Yeah.
like those kinds of things. It's that's more of the direction that I was going
Well,
in.
and I love that you're saying that because I think it really ties into our business conversation, which is, not, people say to me all the time, I want to be a speaker. I want to, be a workshop facilitator. And I'm like, there's this many people that make that much money doing it. And there's this many people that make very little money doing it. And it's like what you're saying. There's this many people that make this much money singing. This many people who love to sing don't make any money. Like, not all of us are going to become movie stars tomorrow if you love acting. So I love what you're saying. I think it's really wise for entrepreneurs to really think that because that's the starting point of starting a business. Is this a business or is it a hobby? If you love to make soaps, market it out, and you know, it might be fun to make some money on the side, or is this just a fun passion project for you because you love essential oils and giving people stuff that makes it smell nice?
Yeah, 100%. So I
Love
guess
that.
this goes along the lines of like, what's one thing you should not do when starting a business?
One thing you should not do is, I sort of mentioned already, spend all your money on marketing stuff and all that. I think that's number one. The other number one thing I think you should do is get out of the mindset, and this is very much a mindset thing, that it's about sell, sell, sell. I gotta go sell. I gotta sell. I gotta sell my service. I gotta sell this. I gotta sell my product. That just, you know, I don't know why we all of us have that mindset, and I labeling all, but most of us have that mindset. We got to sell, sell, sell. And even I get into that mindset now. It's really about how can I build relationships? How can I find out what people need? And can I give them what they need? If the question is really we want to ask is how can I help? And it's a very different mindset because it takes the pressure off you. Because people have a choice not to buy your stuff. So get out of, I got to sell, sell, sell. Good salespeople create a conversation and they know that the buy, the sale happens in the mind of the other person. So you need to get into the head of your target audience. Go, what do they need to be, do, know, or have to say yes? And have a create a dialogue. Get into what I call an engagement mindset versus a selling, convincing mindset.
Yeah, I would fully agree with that because I always thought selling was so gross. Like anytime I heard that, I was like, ooh, that makes me feel very icky. But once somebody explained it in a fully different way that they're like, no, you never should sell. Just be a kind, open, caring person who wants to help, and that will naturally lead to sales. That's
Totally.
that totally switched. And I was like, oh, well, I do that all the time. And so then that totally reframed it in my mind as like, oh, just treat people with respect and kindness, which is I do, and educate them, and they will come and find you.
And that is such a good point. And I still think you need a sales prop. Like, I still think you need to generate leads and do all that sales stuff. Yes. But what you're saying is so right because it is about how can I help? And when you create relationships with you, and all of us want referral-based sales. Like that's the number one way to grow your business is referrals. It's not cold calling. If I, you know, I got a cold call, I'm like, oh my gosh, please don't waste your
I
time.
got an email the other day that made me feel so icky that they portrayed it in a way that they were like, oh, can't even remember what he said, but he was like saying, oh, I like this post you did or talking about this, and then started talking about his product all of a sudden. I was like, what the f this is, I didn't ask you to pitch me. I didn't give you permission to pitch me. I can give you permission to say something to me and say, hey, how's it going? I liked your post, start a relationship, but like, don't throw that shit in my face right away.
Well, and you hit on another great point. Here's a number one thing not to do. So I probably have three number one things not to do. And you hit the nail on the head. Don't post sales stuff on social media and direct message people through LinkedIn, YouTube, Insta, any of them, and try to sell them your stuff. It does not work. You are not going to sell, just because you put something on Instagram does not mean anybody's going to buy it. And if you direct message me to buy your stuff, I'm probably not going to. And one of my favorite things I see these days on LinkedIn, because that's where my audience hangs out, who buy me, is I think someone went to, I always like, someone went to a course and taught this, and now I'm getting all of this. So I get someone went to a course, financial services professionals went to a course that said, friend people on LinkedIn. Then send them a message about the great financial services you offer. What do you think the number one thing I do is I unfollow, I immediately unfriend them or unconnect them or whatever the word is. Because I'm like, I can tell y'all went to a course. Don't do this.
Yeah, same. Same. And you can
Oh, I
smell
hate
them from a
that.
mile away. You know what?
Yes.
I went to the degree actually on LinkedIn where you can click the settings and I don't let anybody who's not a friend of mine message me. And so I've
Nice.
turned it all off. You can add me or like whatever their version
Yeah.
of it is. And then in that, you can send some sort of a message or something to be like, this is why I want to connect. But if we don't have people in common and like looking at your profile, There's nothing that I'm seeing, and you're like in the SEO world, or you're in
Oh, I
like a something where I'm
know.
like, just because we're both in SEO world doesn't mean nothing to me. I don't need whatever you're selling or pitching. No,
I
thank
know.
you.
So I get people that connect with me. They're like, oh, let's be friends. And I look, they're like B2B sales or B2B sales. And I'm like, I'll connect. And if they send me a thing, hey, let's book a meeting to talk about how I can help you. I used to be nice and say, this sales process doesn't work. And I'd unfriend them. Now I just delete them.
Yeah, no time. So I want to continue the conversation along.
Yes.
A lot of your work is helping to prepare businesses for the future and the future of what work looks like. Because going through the pandemic, if it, I mean, it taught us many things, but one of those many things that it taught us is that work is going to look very different. And since nobody knows the future, how can organizations and businesses best prepare themselves for that future?
For sure. So, I think the biggest thing is we want to look at the trends around, what the future work is. So obviously AI, it's the number one thing driving the conversation around the future of work. And there used to be conversations on, oh, it's going to take away my work and blah, blah, blah. I don't believe that. And the research doesn't support that. The research supports it's going to streamline our work. So I think the biggest thing for people to be aware of with the future of work is they need to build, and this is where going through COVID can help. The future of work's going to change. What we need to do is build our own capabilities, our team's capabilities, and our organization's capabilities to be future ready, to build those muscles that we can handle whatever comes up. And the way to do that, one of the best ways to do that is look at the agility that happened through COVID, that what all of us, in the world had to go through. Like all of us built different change muscles throughout that about how we respond to the future. And what I recommend every entrepreneur, every team member, every leader in a bank or any big organization is sit down with yourself and your team and go, what are the new skills and abilities we learned? And how can we apply those to navigating the future? So it might be stuff like we're good at rolling with ambiguity. We can change on a dime. Like when people say to me, my organization's slow moving, I'm like, that's not true. They changed like this. Everybody went virtual March 12th or whatever it was in 2020. That's fast. So let's find out what drivers were able to make us move fast and how we can replicate that. Because change, future works like this. I think with AI, which is, I would say, the number one thing, I think we have to really, and organizations are figuring this out. I think as entrepreneurs, we have to really stay true to this for every type of entrepreneur. People are hiring you because of you. People are hiring you, buying your products because of you. If you use AI to generate all your content, all your conversation, and don't edit it to put your voice in, you just sound generic. So you have to use your critical thinking skills, and the research is showing that critical thinking skills are going to be more in demand for everyone as we start to look through AI and go, hey, I'm going to use this word or not. And all your people listening and I can see an AI-generated email. This is a momentous occasion that's going to be extra friggin' fabulous, and that's going to do, and I'm like, this is not you.
Yeah, there's definitely differences in the voice, 110%. And as an SEO person, yeah, I do use AI to help
Worse.
craft and help create outlines. And it's for me, it's the difference of looking at a blank piece of paper going or blank screen being like, okay, what do I need to create here? And then just taking an outline, being like, roughly, this is the direction you should go in, like a template, and going, oh, okay, I have a roadmap to follow now. That's who can really benefit from using AI, using those critical thinking skills.
You're so right, and I think the big thing with that is, you're still the expert in your world, Callan. Like all the people listening are still the experts in their world. And, if you're listening, yes, use AI to help with structure and find a different word for something. But ultimately, you want to bring your wisdom, your expertise to the table. Anybody can use AI, but people want you. People want your product, they want your service. We have to make that assumption. Yes, help AI write it or whatever, but then edit it so it sounds like your voice. Because that's what the future work is really about, uniqueness.
Yeah.
How do you stand out? I don't care if it's a product or a service, how do you stand out?
So would you say that a lot of that also comes in the package of like soft skills as well, developing a lot more of those soft skills? Just from my kind of perceptions, this might not be correct, but my perceptions are kind of we're going from old guard to new generation. We're going through generational change right now, definitely. And a lot of that is going from leave your emotions at home, don't talk about home life, work. This is a certain type of roboticness to it when you come to work, and this is how things look. And things are kind of shifting to kind of have a little bit more of those soft skills and acceptance of that. There's that transition
So
happening.
you're right. So COVID prompted that. So COVID was the first time in our lifetime that here in North America and Western Europe, obviously when there's conflicts and wars and all that stuff going on in other parts, COVID was the least of their worries, just to be clear. So I'm very much talking Western Europe, North America, because that's what I can speak to. It was a life-defining moment for all of us who were here. And it was the only time where we had that intersection of personal and professional. And that has changed the workplace for sure. And for good, I think. I don't call them soft skills because I think they're the hardest skills to teach. I
I
call them
agree.
interpersonal skills. So yeah, I call them the hardest skills. I can teach anybody to do a plan or a strategic plan. Teaching someone how to lead their team or communicate is so much harder. So I call those interpersonal skills. And I believe that as we become more tech focused, as you know, you've seen the rapid advancements in technology, your interpersonal skills are even more important, and you cannot hide behind a text message anymore. The great thing with tech is, you know, we can see each other all the time if we need to, even if I'm, you know, talking to someone at a distance who lives in South America or Europe. If we're going to have a conversation that could have potential conflict or disruption, something in it, we need to do it with video, and because I need to be able to see you, and then we need to be able to talk. So you're 100% right. And the interpersonal skills for people are going to be ramped up. And this is the other key thing, especially in tech. People that are technologically based and thought-based that way, and I'd say this with any profession that has a lot of terminology, you have to learn how to translate for your buyer. So, you know, in the old days, a tech guy would come up, let's pretend, you know, 20 years ago, tech guy would come up to me, hey, I need this cable, I need this. I'm like, I don't know what the heck you're talking about. Can you just speak in terms? And then I'd be told the problems between the chair and the keyboard. I'm like, I'm not the problem. I don't understand you. So it's like you were saying earlier about look, you know, learning about finance. When people talk to finance about me, they might as well be speaking Arabic because I can't understand a word. So I need translation. So all of us that have product or services to sell have to learn how to translate our language so that our buyer can understand us, which is very much what you're saying.
Definitely. And in terms of everything that we've been talking about here in this last little bit of the conversation, directionally, what do you think directionally is good for the overall workforce, but that leaders have been struggling to grow and evolve with?
I think leaders, and I include myself and I include you in this, we don't know how to listen to people's personal stuff, and we don't necessarily want to because we got work to do. I'm generalizing. So this is a challenge, I think, for all of us as leaders. And I, you know, anybody listening here is a leader. Leader's not about a job title. You know, I've worked with frontline admin professionals who can rope people into doing anything. And I've worked with CEOs who can't get anyone to do a thing. So leadership is about a mindset, not a function. It's just, I just want to put that out there for everyone so they know where I'm coming from. I think the big thing is we want to solve everyone's problems. And you know, I can diagnose you, I'll diagnose everybody listening, I'll diagnose myself. We're all really good problem solvers. And the problem with being a really good problem solver, Callan, and you know this, and all your listeners know this, is that you want to solve everyone's problems. And one of my early bosses said to me, there's some great things about being a problem solver. You'll always have a job. You'll always have people buying your stuff because you're problem solving stuff for people. The downside is you're going to want to solve everyone's problems. And when people bring their personal stuff to work, you don't need to solve it. Because the thing is this, listening and acknowledging what's going on for people can move people down that path of change. So, if you've had a bad day at work, not where you work now, of course, but other places, and you go home after work, you're like, oh my gosh, I had the most rotten day. Callum was on me about this, and Maria wouldn't stop me about that. And Saheed couldn't go stop going on about that report. I had a rotten day. And the person says, well, did you talk to them about it? Did you think, they're trying to problem solve? You get frustrated. What you really want them to do, which de-escalates, is, hey, Callum, it sounds like you had a really rough day.
Empathize.
Empathize. And that's what empathetic leadership is about. Thank you for bringing that up. Because using empathetic leadership moves people down that path of change. And I believe it's going to be one of the number one skills required of leaders, whether it's small organizations or big. The other skill that's going to be required too, which is really interesting coming from the research, which will be of interest to your listeners, is conflict resolution. The reason being, this year alone, 50% of the planet is going through elections, and people are becoming more polarized. And you can't necessarily not have those conversations at work. Conflicts will arise, so how do we mediate those and have that conflict discussion?
This, I'm so glad you brought this up. This is probably my biggest, oh, I don't even know what to call this. This is my biggest issue or irk with the world is the polarization. And I think social media, because we were a child, we're still a child generation of social media. We still don't quite understand it or know it or what it does to us. We're starting to learn, but it's definitely not been good in many ways. This hyperpolarization and this siloing of people and their beliefs and their systems has completely broken down, and also the digitization of not seeing people in real life. You say things to people online you would never say to them in real life or to their face.
Absolutely.
And I personally think and feel and have experienced that when you are with somebody in person having a conversation that you disagree with, that's totally fine. People will are more open to having the conversation, whereas online they shut it down. They go, nope, this is my belief system. And that is such a huge disservice to not only yourself, but for the world at large. I've always said that if you want to get anything done, you need to be a bridge maker, not a bridge destroyer.
You are
You
so
need
right.
to be able to have those conversations with people. Like, I would sit at a table with people that I hate, with homophobic people and like everybody from the spectrum. I would sit at the table with them and have the conversation, because if I don't sit there and have that conversation, they aren't getting a bridge to them. They don't know the things that I can share. And it's not my job to convince them of thinking differently. It's my job to show up authentically and share the knowledge that I have. And if they want to accept it or take at least one grain on, great, because I'm sure there's something that I can learn from them as well, even if I don't agree with them. And I think that that's going to be huge in the workplace, is being able to understand the concept that understanding and empathizing doesn't mean you agree. And I think that people put us in those two separate camps of either you're with me or against
I
me.
agree. And and again, what the research shows around this is most people want to play in the middle. If you look at most people are left of center or right of center, if you want to just talk about politics. Most people don't hate LGBT folks. Like we see that on the news or this, but it's really not most people. And I think you hit a really good point, which is, there's a big difference between activism and advocacy. I believe activism is needed. I am not that person. I am more of an advocate. So what that looks like to me is this, and I think your analogy of sitting at a table. I have worked with people who maybe don't understand LGBT people. Just a couple of months ago, I remember, no, but a couple of years ago, we have a lake house out in the country, and a couple who are friends of ours said they'd never met any gay people before. This is in 2022, 2021, that they knew of, right? And I'm like, that you know of. And they were surprised that they said, you're just like us. All you want to know is what you're going to have for dinner and who's doing the laundry and where you're going to eat. I'm like, yeah. So what's important about that is this, is just living your life. And of course, you have to feel safe to do it. I'm not saying go somewhere that you don't feel safe. Not what I'm saying. If you just live your life as you, Callan, as me, Greg, And again, for a trans person, that's a completely different conversation. So I can't speak to that because I'm not trans myself. But any trans person that I've worked with or talked to, it gets a real different conversation. So I'm just speaking from my truth, is that I've been able to, I don't know if I've changed minds, but I've been able to open minds by just being me and sitting around the table. I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything, just being myself. And I think you're right. It's that armchair. You're never going to change anybody's mind on social media, so don't bother. Like, don't be an armchair warrior. Don't get into fighting matches. Don't worry about correcting things. If it's hate stuff, yes, report it. But you're not going to convince anybody with a meme or a graphic or this. You're preaching to the converted. And it's been, I've had to learn that. And I think the thing is, this is the polarization. This is the bad thing about social media, which I agree with you. We see the polarization. We don't see the rest of us in the middle. And the majority of us are. You know, even in the U.S., if you look at Republicans versus Democrats, most Republicans are not jerks. Most Democrats are not jerks. Most people just want to play in the middle and get along.
Yeah, the majority, I would say, probably wants to be in the middle and get along. And then, and there's always a swing back and forth for a little bit of balance on each side. But like, the extreme swings are too much, too much.
No, and that's what it is. And that's what gets the press. And we're seeing that in Canada here as well. So, you know, we're not immune. And I really think, and you have this back to business. You can run things based on fear, or you can run things based on the benefit and good that you can do. And you have a choice as an entrepreneur to do that. You can do fear-based selling. You know, if you don't do this, this is what could happen. And I'm fine with that if that's your model. Or you can do, you know, this is going to benefit you in some way. There's different ways, you know, like, you know, advertisements on TV, sometimes like they're fear-based, sometimes they're not.
Yeah. So in saying all of this, where do you usually find the most friction when dealing with organizations and change? Is it the workforce? Is it the leadership? Is it somewhere in between?
So I think the deal is this. I think in organizations, small or large, everybody thinks the leader has the answer and they don't. So I believe this, and I'd say this in a, you know, one or two person operation or 50,000. Sometimes as a leader, you're at the front pulling people along. Sometimes you're at the back, you know, this little silent bulldozer guiding people because you're really clear where to go. 9 times out of 10, you're leading alongside your team. You don't have a clue either. And yes, you have a goal you want to get to, and we have to lead alongside our team. And I think the hardest part is for leaders to admit that, hey, I don't have all the answers. And I think it's also the workforce's piece to not expect the leader to have the answer and to ask the questions. So I think it's sort of a dual piece, because even during COVID, everybody was leading alongside their team. Nobody knew what the heck was happening, and we still had to get things done. So it's a mindset shift that I don't need to have all the answers. I'm in this with you, and I'll let you know things when I know them, when I can let you know them. And we're going to have to work in more of a symbiotic relationship. So, because I think middle managers have it really hard in organizations, because they're like, these people above me want this to happen. These people haven't started yet. So you're sort of always doing that tension. But I think everybody has a difficult, you know, hard, if you want to look at it that. I don't think there's, I think there's, if you're the CEO, you're pressured with the board, or you're pressured with, you know, high level finance stuff that you probably know more about than I do. Because, you know, finance stuff. Whereas if you're the frontline person, you're running on that treadmill trying to keep up in a different way by completing tasks.
Definitely. So is there anything specifically that you would say to leadership and what leaders should know?
Yes. I think leaders should get really clear on the language that they're using with their team, and not to use euphemisms and buzzwords. So let me give you some practical examples of that. So one of the pieces I like to say to people is future focus your language. So by that means, if you talk about how things used to be, hey, we used to do it like this, we used to do it like this, you're just gonna do more of that. So what we wanna do, because we want our brains to figure things out quickly, right? Because you don't have all the time in the world. Our brains tend to work against us, so we want them to work for us. So let me give you a quick tip on how to do that. If you've ever written a paper for university or school or or even bought a new car. So when you buy, so let's say you wrote a paper for school on like evaluation, or for you it might be SEO optimization. All of a sudden you start to notice things online. People are, you're like, someone's talking about SEO here. Oh, there's more online here. Look, there's something on the news, because your brain is pulling in ideas, and it creates neurons and neural pathways and all this sort of brain science stuff, which I don't want to go into. But it's pulling in information faster than conscious thought. Now, don't we want that to happen at work? So what we often see at work with leaders is they'll be like, we don't know what we're going to do. We're not sure how to figure this out. And just like, writing a paper on SEO, you're not going to get any ideas on how to figure this out. So you want to future focus your language and say stuff like, we're going to figure this out. What do we need to do to figure this out? And ask those questions. Because if you start asking those right questions, your brain will generate ideas in 2 to 3 minutes. It sounds simple, but when you're under pressure, you forget to do it. And it's one of the most life-changing things I can tell people is pay attention. Now, this isn't positive thinking. So let's just, I hate positive thinking because most of the time it's used at the wrong time. This is brain science about putting a stake in the ground and going, okay. It's like when you buy a new car. If you've ever bought a car, you start to notice everybody else has the new car, or someone's been pregnant, they notice everybody else is pregnant. Doesn't mean there's more new cars, doesn't mean more people are pregnant. It just means you've triggered your brain to notice.
Yeah.
So pay conscious attention to get your team to notice what you want them to notice, because we all get stuck in our box.
Yeah, directional
Another
thinking and an awareness of the thing.
awareness and catching it, catching the thoughts you think before you go into a meeting, before you go into a sales conversation. And it's because the thoughts you think drive your actions and your behaviors, and drive the, and because the language that you use is the currency with which you get your work done. It has. If you use the wrong language, you disengage people. If you use the right language, you engage people. And I wrote a paper years ago, which I'll send you a link that you can pop into podcasts, and it's on my website, bechangeready.com, called Six Things to Say During Change, Six Things Not to Say. So stuff like, don't say stuff like, it's going to be all right, because you don't know that, right? So you want to say instead stuff like, hey, these things could happen. We're going to work it out together. And again, it's not positive thinking. Instead of like, oh, that's a third world problem. Well, other than that being insulting, it diminishes that person's experience at that moment. So there's tricks and tips that as leaders, we want to do to not disengage our team. I'm going to make sure I pop that link in, but it's on my website, bechangeready.com, and just search for six things to say.
Yeah, we'll make sure we have that in the show notes and in links.
Perfect.
I want to just double down on what you said because it is really important. I noticed this in my life, and when I made a change in my life to be like, okay, when people talk about all these negative things, and then I get really drained, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to listen to them, but I'm a good listener, so I just let them bitch and moan, and then I feel drained, they feel better, but I'm like, but nothing's actually changed, and so I implemented like this. People are allowed to do like 10 to 20% of bitching with me. And then the rest of it is the figure out stuff. And I didn't teach them that. I just asked better questions when it
Right.
happened. And my questions were always going to be like, okay, we've gone over like what's going on, but like what thoughts do you have on like what you're going to do about it or what you're going to change about it or like what ideas do you have? And it was just
I
me
love that.
guiding their thought process without them maybe knowing or understanding that I was
You are
guiding the thought
coaching them.
process.
You are coaching them.
But like it's like those friend conversations or even parents do
Yeah.
this when they get under our skin and you're just like ah you can guide the conversation and be like cool so you've talked about all the things you hate or like this awful
Yeah.
person like what and then just ask those open questions and guiding into the direction of like figuring things out or like
Love that.
problem solving but it makes a huge difference and you really are the curator of your own life if you choose to actively engage with it.
Well, and I love that. And I think the corollary to that, or the caution, is you have to be clear on your timing of that. Because if someone is really having a bad day, you just want to be in it with them.
Yes,
What you're saying
yes.
is not that, I
No,
know.
no, no. But there's the social.
There's that, yeah, where you're just like, there's an indigenous saying, I think it's the Navajo in the US. I love it. I'm 90% sure it's Navajo. If it's not that, I apologize, but it's an indigenous saying in the US. Says, I will listen to your complaint three times. the fourth time I turn away.
Yeah.
And it's really, at the core of what you're saying is some really good indigenous wisdom around that. Because, like I will listen just to some complaints, but eventually I'm going to start asking some questions, say, hey, is it okay if we look at some ways to try to problem solve this a little bit? Because you keep repeating that.
Yeah, because some
Tell me
days
the
it's
way you
like,
do it.
if they're just bitching and it's like, sometimes you just need to sit with somebody if they're having a bad day. We all have those. And understanding that this isn't regular for this person, I need to just sit with them and be with them in empathy for this moment. But it's the reoccurringness of it. It's like, okay, you've talked about this like every time we've seen each other in the past, like, you know, 5 times we've seen each other. It's now time to move off of this. That's the moment you bring that kind of stuff in.
And I love that. And I think, and I think, what you're really saying here underneath, just from what I'm hearing you say, and it ties back to business as well, which is, one of my number one tips I tell people is follow your gut and intuition. If something feels like it's right to do now, it probably is right. If it feels wrong, or this feels like the wrong group of people or something, it probably is. And you have to distinguish between real fear and fake fear, so, which is a whole other conversation. But when you follow your gut, like when I know I've taken on business I shouldn't take on, or have a conversation I shouldn't have based on what we were just talking about, it's always come back to bite me in the butt. Like it's not in a good way. So if I start problem solving someone's stuff and it's my gut says, don't do it, Greg, shut up and listen. And I start, it bites me. And same with business. If I go down the path, I take on a piece of it, I'm like, this isn't good business. I should say no. It'll always bite me.
Yeah. So
And
we've talked. Oh, sorry. I was going to say.
No,
So
I
we've.
was just going to say, it really ties into what you're saying, which is following your gut instinct about when it's right to step in, when it's right not, when it's right to take on business, when it's not.
Yeah, definitely. So we've done leadership. What about workers? What do they need to know?
About change?
Yeah.
I think that they need to know how to relentlessly prioritize. So let me just explain what I mean by that. The world of work is picking up. Everything's, you think it's fast this year, it's going to be faster next year. So everything's going to be faster. There's only so much time you have during the day, and you shouldn't be working 60, 80 hours a week. Yes, there's peaks and valleys, but you have to have a quality of life outside of it, depending your age. All that, you are going to want to have peaks and valleys. I think the piece about prioritization is learning as a work someone who's a worker person in an organization to say when someone delegates something to you, if you can't prioritize it yourself, is to have the dialogue and say, hey, yes, I can do that. And this is the impact on either my time, on the scope of work I'm doing, or on a budget or cost or whatever you're managing. This is the impact. Are you okay if I do that? So, because you might have to prioritize something that might be a different priority to you than it is for me. And if we can have a dialogue around, hey, yes, I can do it. And this is the impact. Are you okay with that? It allows us to have a quick conversation to make sure you're prioritizing the way I need you to prioritize if I'm the leader. And sometimes relentless prioritization means changing things every, and you know this, changing every half an hour to an hour because stuff comes in. And prioritization doesn't mean not everything you do is important and urgent.
Oh yes, the
Yes,
box.
or
That what
matrix.
is it? Is that Eisenhower?
Steven Covey, importancy and
Yes.
urgency, importance matrix.
Yes.
Most people run their work by the emails that come in. Don't. Not every piece of work you come in is urgent and important. So I used to have, true story, I still have right here, a pile on my desk of stuff that comes in. So I have some stuff that's urgent and important, which I do right away. Sometimes I have that's important that's not urgent, like fill out this form and I put it lower on my list. Some things are urgent, but they're not that important. So I sort of, if I have some space, I do them. But they're not, they might be urgent to you, but I don't really care. And, that's my own, I can discriminate on that. I have a pile of stuff I print out because I'm sorry, I print them out to all people that don't want me to print, but I do. It's called my non-urgent, non-important pile. And I go through it once every 6 months. And do you think there's, I might miss something, but it wasn't that urgent or that important, or someone would ask for it. So there's a lot of work we have that is make work that you don't need to do. And if you're unclear, ask someone.
Yeah, big time. I have like set rules of like when I work as an entrepreneur specifically as well as like I do not start work before this time, or I don't do face-to-face work, or like I don't have to be at my desk until
Love
this
that.
time. And then I leave, hard leave is like 5 p.m. Like nothing is ever going to be that important or urgent enough. And if it is, I will know. And it is a high
I
barrier.
love that. So one of the things you've really hit on that I want to touch on, because it's so important for business owners, is to learn the rhythm and flow of how you like to work. So you've really hit on that. So for example, if I have to do numbers or deep admin stuff, I have to do it first thing in the morning so I can direct all my energy to that. I tend to not book podcast interviews, anything numbers, anything after 3 o'clock, because I'm basically brain dead. I'm a 7 a.m. person. That's the way I work. So if you have control over that, anyone that's listening, find your rhythm and go with it and do what Callan says, because I love what you're saying. Develop the ritual. So, I come downstairs to my, I'm lucky I have my own office, turn everything on. At the end of the day, I put my computer down. I like
Yeah,
shut it off,
same.
clean up my desk. I might, if there's something going on that I'm waiting for, I might bring my mobile phone upstairs. I have two phones, one for work, one for home, even though I have my own business. And I bring my mobile up just in case there's a few things I might, there might be a few little straggly things I have to do before 5 or 6 for, people in different time zones because I work internationally, blah, blah, blah. And then it goes off.
Yeah. Because there's nothing, I mean, unless somebody's dying who's very important to you, there's very few things that are going to be that important. It's more often somebody else is putting the urgency into it because of their anxiety around it, or their like, their experience with work. For me, I'm like, I created
You're
being an
100% right.
entrepreneur for a reason. It's so I didn't have to live that lifestyle of anxiety and anxiousness.
You are so right. It's like, I can't. So the number one distractor I was reading, which I just love and I believe it's true, is where people text you after hours, "Hey, do you know where this file is?" No. Go look it up yourself. Like, I don't say that to be mean, but what I do say is, by the time you respond to them, they've usually found it. And what I've encouraged everyone to do, and I have this at the bottom of my emails, is I say right very clearly, my work hours may not be your work hours. Don't, sorry, I'll tell you exactly. It says, feel free to respond during your normal work hours. Because some people like to work at night. I don't. But it does say, my work hours may not be yours. Feel free to respond during your normal work hours. Because there's no pressure for you to respond to my stuff at 10 o'clock at night. Just because I
Yeah.
wake up and go, that's a great email.
You know,
Give
every.
people permission to opt out.
Yes. Yeah. I think technology kind of, we went down this rabbit hole of like overperforming, especially in North America. We're so perform, perform, perform. Like you have to deliver, you have to be available at all times and sell your soul and sell your life. And it's like, the part of me that learned about this is I moved and lived in Europe. I lived in London for over a year.
Nice.
And I got, when I first started my part-time job, I had 6 weeks full paid holiday right off the get-go. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? Because they believed in like, no. Like you need to re relax and rest in order to become your best self to come back to work. And I think
Sure.
we've missed it in North America. You actually get more productive. It's a totally counterintuitive. I get more productive the lazier I allow myself to be, because I force myself to only do the things that are going to move the needle forward in business.
That is so good. I used to tell people I'm lazy at heart. I like and I don't mean that in a negative way. I just have always pro I've always wanted, and not everybody's like that, but I've always wanted a work-life balance. And sometimes, and I don't think it's true that everything gets balanced. Sometimes it's peaks and valleys. Sometimes life takes over. Sometimes work
Yeah.
takes over. And some people are the opposite of that. And I think everybody can be who they are. You just don't want to burn yourself out. And that is a real key point, is that we just don't want to burn ourselves out.
Yeah, exactly. Life comes in ebbs and flows. Greg, this has been an absolutely phenomenal conversation. Where can folks find out more about you if they want to check out what you do?
Absolutely. Go to bechangeready.com is my website, and I'm all there. Or you can check me out on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram at Greg Brown TO, like Greg Brown Toronto, GREGGBROWNTO. You can get that all there from my website, bechangeready.com.
Awesome. And I'll make sure to have those links in the show notes. Thank you so much for being a guest today, Greg.
Thank you. I've so enjoyed talking with you, Callan.
Thanks again for tuning in today. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. And if you really enjoyed today's episode, I would love a star rating from you. The Business Gay Podcast is written, produced, and edited by me, Callan Brecken. That's it for today. Peace, love, rainbows.